Mysterious graffiti artist Banksy. Now, he pulled one of his greatest stunts yet. One of his most famous paintings, The Girl with the Balloon, which is a stencil of a young girl holding up a balloon, which is a heart, like as if it's floating away, if you haven't seen it. On the second that they said sold at a Sotheby's auction, it's self-destructed thanks to an inbuilt paper shredder. So half of the painting, or sorry, picture, I don't know, would you call a painting or a picture? I think we call it a painting of sorts, yeah. Well, half of that was just shredded pieces of paper at the end. And is it about all sorts of issues, maybe the way art auctions work, or is it more than that? Well, I'm going to talk to somebody who's been getting around to many festivals and now is running one of his own. Jonathan Holloway is the artistic director, currently the artistic director of the Melbourne Festival, previously with the Perth International Festival as well. Hello, Jonathan.
Good afternoon, Mef.
Would you call Banksy's work a painting, or is it a
I think it was a painting because he framed it.
And yeah.
So it's a classic. It was a reproduction of a stencil that he did on a wall.
Very famous.
Very famous in a frame. And into that frame, he apparently a few years ago built a shredder. So the moment it was sold for £1.2 million, somebody presses the button and the thing, half of the picture shreds. So you end up with half the picture in the bottom of the frame and then strips.
Yeah.
Apparently it's increased in value by about 50%.
That's what I was thinking. In doing that, hasn't this actually made the painting increase in its value, but also that's exactly what Banksy himself is against, which is the art world and the art market, which does not look out generally for artists.
Absolutely. But also it's fascinating because it makes the process of auction the art. That's what's the process. The process is buying the art becomes the trigger for the value of the art. And it's a huge comment, but it's also, I love the fact that it sits in a long line of hoaxes and tricks and stunts. And as soon as you start going down that rabbit hole, it gets really exciting.
I love it. We are going to learn about a couple of those tricks and stunts today. But let's keep talking about Banksy for a moment. What do you think he is getting us to think about when you see someone do something like that? And the people beside the painting had no idea it was happening until it had happened.
Well, for many years, he did work which was almost entirely graffiti on walls, including obviously in the Middle East. He went into places he shouldn't be. He's put fake art into galleries. And then the last two pieces, Dismal Land, was his kind of recreation of Disneyland. And then a hotel that's overlooking the wall in the Middle East, which absolutely takes apart the idea of what it is to have a hotel. And now to kind of really have a hoax in an auction. And I mean, I find it interesting. I think it will be difficult to pick up an artwork that's meant to be a simple framed artwork that has a shredder in it without thinking this is heavier than it probably should be.
I find that very hard to believe. At Sotheby's, I imagine they would pick things apart. I've done art curatorial studies. That's what I did as my postgrad, and every artwork would be examined. Surely there must have been insiders on the job.
On the other hand, how many times have you bought an artwork and got a free shredder?
Yeah,
I reckon this is exactly what you want. It's a twofer. It's a two for one deal. He's cheeky. He's outrageous. He's also very smart. And well-resourced in terms of, as you say, who knows and who doesn't know.
Yeah. What is it, though? He's saying that the art world, art market is a sham. Is he commenting on the ludicrous amount of money that people spend on art?
I think his argument would be that his art has always been in the public domain and therefore you put a price on it. People have chopped bits of walls that he's graffitied on and then sold them, and that's absolutely against everything he believes in. He fell out with his previous manager, which is really interesting because the Banksy exhibition that happened here was unauthorised. And so... And in itself had a conversation about commerce. I think, yes, he's having a go at the whole process of Sotheby's and the whole process of auctions, but it only benefits Sotheby's. I don't think anyone's talked about them this much in years.
No, that's true. It's a little bit like the gambling being projected on the sales of the Opera House.
The
I didn't even know about that horse race until this had happened.
But for me, the difference is that the canvas in Banksy's case has increased in value. It's added value to something that was already worth £1.2 million. I think a lot of people would say that projecting onto the sales of the Opera House onto a heritage site arguably devalues the site, the canvas itself, rather than adding to it. Nobody today thinks the Opera House is classier than it was last week.
Yeah.
And so, whereas the Banksy actually, really, now you look at that and you think it's Yes, its value is huge because it's now an iconic, not only an iconic work, but it's an iconic moment. Mm.
Jonathan Holloway is my guest, artistic director of the Melbourne Festival currently. We'll find out how that's going for you too. You're in the midst of it right now. You've also done the Perth International Festival, travelled around the world. You'd be well across a lot of stunts that artists have pulled like this. I imagine they've happened as part of some of your festivals. On the text line, Jen has mentioned a great art stunt prank. David Bowie pranked the art world
yep.
by making up an abstract artist, says Jen. Bowie, with his wife Iman at his side, hosted a reception of the latest book by best-selling British writer William Boyd. The book told the life story of American abstract expressionist artist Nat Tate, who actually never existed.
Never existed. This is 1998. Well, they hosted it at Jeff Koons' gallery in New York. They claimed that Nat Tate had, in the 60s, been part of a movement from, but had committed suicide, and 90% of the work had been destroyed on the day before Nat Tate died. So there was only a small proportion left. And it was just a complete hoax. And David Lister was the journalist involved. And after the second opening of this exhibition, came out and said, look, I can't carry this on anymore. I have to carry this scoop. But then actually Australia kind of starred it with Ern Mallee. Ern Mallee in 1943 was created by some Australian journalist, a poet. The poet Ern Mallee
right.
was created in one day in order to hoax the guys at Angry Penguins.
The Angry Penguins, the art movement.
The art movement. And it worked. And so, I mean.
Who was behind the Ern Mallee?
It was James McCauley and Harold Stewart.
Yeah.
And they were hoaxing Max Harris and the Angry Penguin movement. And it's really smart when that kind of thing happens.
What's the point of a hoax, though? Is it to make us question everything? Is it to make us sort of unsee what we think we see?
I mean, I think there's a really strong argument that says a hoax is no less valuable than the real thing.
Mm.
I mean, David Blaine really did sit in a glass box over London for 29 days, and to this day I can't see why it wouldn't have been more interesting to have just pretended he'd done it and done something else instead, and maybe he did, but I think it does make you question the value of everything. And so Ai Weiwei, when he, which isn't a hoax, but Ai Weiwei dropped a Han Dynasty vase worth $1 million, and the famous photograph of the three photos of him dropping that vase, which is 2,000 years old.
Mm.
And then you get a moment a few years ago when someone went into his gallery and actually smashed one of his vases sort of in reprisal. And you think, which of those, who's the hoaxer?
Yeah. Oh, I'm very confused now, and you're about to get more confused because we're talking about this UK group. That is the KLF.
Yeah.
UK group who had, you'd just call them dance floor bangers, but
yeah,
they were very political. Behind the sheen of what they made and how we all probably drunkenly danced around handbags and champagne glasses on dance floors throughout the early 90s,
yeah,
what they were doing was really quite political.
It was. And then, of course, so the most famous one being burning £1 million.
Mm, now, this is the sound of £1 million burning.
I know it well. That's right. That's just...
We've all been there.
Yeah.
Why on earth did they burn £1 million?
If I had the answer to that, I'd probably have £1 million. I've absolutely no idea. I mean, they were doing it as a political statement about the music industry, about advances, about the value of money, about the value of art. But it is, having already done bangers and anthems, it's a cracker in terms of artistic activity.
I think their modus operandi was struggling artists are meant to struggle. That's the whole point. So the money that they made out of making a gazillion dollars, they really only ended up having a million, and then they burned it.
Right.
Which a lot of people at the time thought was very excessive and the money could have been better spent. But they stood by that political statement.
It's a great, and it is, that's a great political statement. Of course it is. And actually, that's, isn't everything we're talking about this morning about money? I mean, isn't the
true
Opera House sales about money? Isn't the fact that money is raised from, as you say, gambling and lottery, which all around the world, lottery funds have gone into the arts. And when I was in Western Australia, a huge amount of money came from, the primary grant came from Lottery West. So money's always gone from there into the arts.
Well, that's interesting talking from your perspective, because you're currently the artistic director of the Melbourne Festival, but also you've worked on other festivals as well. How much of that pressure from the outside, the people who spend the money, how much do you... do you have to endure their requests, or is it a better relationship than that? How does it work?
I've never experienced anything like Louise Herron has experienced, or the Opera House. I've never been in an organisation that's had that level of pressure, or indeed had significant pressure. Of course, if it's public money, people should be asking how you're spending it. And so investing public money is in the arts is a really interesting question anyway. And the one argument says, well, if it was good enough, it wouldn't need subsidising. But you could say the same thing about banks or mining or any other industry or broadcasting. Everything needs public subsidy to survive in some form or some way, whether it's subvention or tax relief or direct investment. So the job of government is to make sure everything is balanced and that society provides what society needs to provide for everyone. But yes, that direct level of influence I've not experienced in Australia or in the UK. And it's kind of an extraordinary moment, putting aside, but not quite, the nature of the way it was actually publicly done, the actual interview.
Yeah,
conversation.
That's added to the explosiveness of it, I think.
And that's a new world. Ironically, at a time when we believed we were walking into a different new world, it's a resurgence of something and the public face of something which actually maybe it's useful to be able to see now.
Yeah.
Maybe we can now call it out.
That's true. That is true. Steve on the text line, back to Banksy, has said, this Banksy nonsense just shows what idiots art buyers are. They should use their money to help others instead. That's a fair point, I guess. But, I mean, the art world exists and it's never going away. And
it does. And if you buy a film on Amazon or on or iTunes or any other medium, or you go to the cinema, you are also buying an artwork.
Mm.
So if you buy tickets to see something, you yourself are investing it in art. Now, the difference is, in the art world, it's an investment. So do you invest in a car? Do you invest in a house? Do you invest in artwork? Do you invest in stocks and shares? It's the art world has become commodified in that way, that when you buy a Banksy, you know it's going up in value. So is that better than buying a lottery ticket? Which may not.
Yeah. Tim on the text line has said, how did Banksy do it? Was he there, do you think?
I reckon he allow them being named. I think I'm not sure. I doubt he was there personally because there's so much controversy about who he is.
The guy from Massive Attack?
No, it's not. It's another. It's known but not talked about. I think it is pretty well known. But it's great. But no, if you read the newspapers, it's fascinating conversation.
Is it you?
Okay, I'm prepared to categorically answer one question. It's not me. I was not at Sotheby's on Friday because the festival's on at the moment.
Of course.
Whenever that happened. No, I don't think he was probably there himself. I think it was probably one of the shocked-looking people in the room.
Yeah. Oh, look, it's been fascinating to talk to you about your perspective on all things. Jonathan Holloway, thank you very much.
Thank you.
What a brilliant conversation. Jonathan Holloway there, Artistic Director of the Melbourne International Festival that is on at the moment, and a brilliant insight into the workings of this mysterious beast that is the art and culture world. It's brilliant.